COVID update for middle of September, halfway through the month of September. So fall is knocking on the door, and we'll talk about a few things related to fall coming up. Where are we at with COVID in the country? Basically, case numbers across the whole country have plateaued, or have actually declined slightly in the last week or so. It's shifted a little bit, so numbers are coming down in the South, but going up in Tennessee, West Virginia, and then the Ohio River Valley. So it's kind of like it's moving up the other side of the Appalachians. Here in North Carolina, our numbers have declined slightly. And here in the Triad, they've gone down slightly. We've gone down from between 58 to 60 per 100,000 per day for Forsyth County, down to between 50 to 54, depending on the day. Our percent positivity in Forsyth County has also declined somewhat. But I can tell you, I'd be a lot happier if those numbers were coming down faster. They will come down, but we can make them go down faster by being more careful about what we're doing. Roughly a third of the cases that we're seeing now in the area here are in kids. And the first thing you'll see in the media is, with school being back, which kind of gives the false impression that the school itself is the risk, and which is not the case. School transmission's been pretty uncommon, actually. Now it's a little different for daycare centers, particularly the daycare centers with a lot of younger kids in them. But as we've talked about before, this is one of the big differences between the pandemic in the U.S. between last winter and spring and this fall, is that it's a much more kid-centric transmission epidemic now. So if it's not inside the school itself, where is it? Well, it's the social activities, a lot of which are associated with the school. Football games, post-football game parties, get-togethers, carpooling. So, here in Forsyth County, we have the Career Center, which is where a lot of our older kids and high school kids go to get classes, AP classes and such. And so, Johnny drives by, picks up Freddie, and goes to get another friend, and they drive off to the Career Center together. And then being in a car together is pretty high risk for COVID transmission if somebody has it. The vast majority of our kids are doing okay with COVID. There was an article in one of our local print media the other day with some quotes that a quarter of people were seen now in this area are in kids who have COVID. That was a little bit misleading, because the implications were that was people being admitted to the hospital. No, it's about 30%. In our county and the counties around us are under 18. The majority of that actually is in the 12 to 18 year old group, not in the under 12. Now, the under 12 are the ones who are not vaccinated, but largely the 12 to 18 year old group's not very vaccinated either. It's under half, under 50%, depending where you are and which high school you're talking about. But that's the more socially active group. And it's the after school and around school activities where the transmission's occurring. As far as hospitalizations for kids, we have more people in the hospital now with COVID under 18 than we did last January or February, but the numbers are misleading because it's still a handful. And so if you go from 1 to 2, that's 100% increase. But if you look at the absolute numbers, it's still very low. Most of the kids who are getting hospitalized with COVID in our area here have underlying medical problems. And actually the number one associated problem is being overweight. childhood obesity. So it's almost like two epidemics have crossed, COVID and the childhood obesity epidemic. But the numbers are still very low, and bed availability for kids in our area is still there. So it's not like our children's hospital is filling up with COVID. It's far from that. One thing that right now in our area that's become a bit problematic is access to testing. And so the scenario is like this. Sam gets a cold and Sam wants to go to school, and you need a test if you have a respiratory tract infection to find out if you have COVID or not. So you have to find a place to get tested. There is testing availability through primary care physicians, and there's testing availability in our area here with the Novant Testing Center over at the mall in the old Sears Automotive Center. And there is testing availability at retail pharmacies. The turnaround time, though, for these tests has gone up some. So if you get an appointment at a pharmacy, you're probably going to wait a couple days. And same thing if you go to an urgent care center. There are some rapid antigen tests available in the area, and you have to call around to see about that. And those can still be used, including at the testing centers that I just described. The rapid antigen test is probably good enough with the Delta variant because the amount of virus that's present in somebody who has a symptomatic respiratory tract infection is higher than the previous variants, and so that test is a little bit more sensitive, and you can get the answer back more quickly. But we do need more testing, and we need testing available that's quick. And one way that this could possibly be done is with home testing kits. Home testing kits are a little bit expensive, but the price is going to come down because of an agreement worked out between the federal government and the main providers of these home testing kits. They're also a little bit hard to find. And the retail pharmacies are now limiting to one kit or per person now, most of them anyway. You can buy them on Amazon, but I will tell people to be wary because they are inflated price sites on Amazon where you're going to be paying 3 to 4 times what it should be. And I know this from just checking it out myself. And so the home test kits are probably good enough for testing now. Last spring, I wasn't a big fan of them. But now with vaccinated people and breakthrough infections, quote breakthrough, it would be nice to have a home test kit. So here's how we might use those. So Cindy gets a cold, and she is in second grade. Cindy wants to go to school and has some URI symptoms. You can do a home test kit. And actually, more and more schools are accepting that for entry to the school. Not all are. Not all are, but more are. So let's say you it's Saturday, and your brother's getting married, and you want to go to the wedding. And is it a cold or is it allergies? You're not sure. You can do a home test kit. Let's say that you want to go to Merlefest. They require either vaccination or a test. Let's say you're vaccinated, that'll get you in the door. But if you got the sniffles, you want to make sure that you're not a breakthrough infection. So you would test yourself before going with your home testing kit. Hang in there. The home testing kits are going to become more available. Manufacturing has been tripled in the last couple, 3 weeks. I think the companies see a little bit of a profit advantage there. And And I think it would be worthwhile when they become available and you can get one, is to have a couple of these test kits in your house, so that when you're presented with these situations, you can test yourself. They're not hard to use. It's basically the same as a home pregnancy test, if you've ever been involved in doing one of those. Put a little drop of a reagent after swabbing your nose, and you look for colored lines. Something to be looking for. I think this is one of the things that is going to help us live with COVID. And more living with COVID. I'll talk more about that towards the end of our briefing this morning. But it would be nice to be able to know without having to run out and find a test and take and have the turnaround time that goes with it. Also, related to our kids, the Pfizer is submitting either this week or next week its data for our 5 to 12-year-olds for vaccination. And so it looks like for our kids in that age group, Pfizer will be the first vaccine that we'll be able to offer. That needs to be looked at and reviewed by the FDA, and then the ACIP will weigh in on it. So that I've been saying all along, somewhere between Thanksgiving and Halloween, maybe it's going to be a little closer to Halloween. So that's good news. Maybe our kids will think that a shot is a Halloween horror, but most of our parents will call it a Halloween treat from the trick and treat. So that's good news. I have very high confidence that the vaccine will be very safe, and that it's going to work great in that group. And the dosage actually that will be used is going to be half of what we scheduled for your third dose of vaccine. Here at Wake Forest Baptist Health now, we have several centers that are primary care docs and practices that are giving third doses of vaccine for immunocompromised people. I still get asked a lot about boosters. The question is mostly, should I go get my booster now? So, we have not yet reviewed or authorized boosters for the general population here in the United States. The FDA will probably release their review next week. They're going through the process now and going through the committee meetings. Some of that information's been leaked to the press. And I can tell you, like I have over the last month, that it's not as straightforward as you would think. So with COVID vaccine, as with all vaccines, more is not necessarily better. And so we need to go through and review the science and look out. So what the questions that one would want to know for boosters, one, when should you get it? Should it be 6 months out, 8 months out, 10 months out? Was one even needed at all, depending on your underlying medical condition and age? What would be the right dose? What should be in the booster? Should it be the same thing that's in the regular shot? I think what's going to end up happening for the general public, that for the messenger RNA vaccines, what we consider as a full vaccine series of two doses will end up becoming three. And what it'll be is you'll get one dose, and then a month later you'll get your second dose, and then 6 months later you'll get your third dose. And it's exactly like we do hepatitis B. And so that spacing kind of makes sense. But don't be surprised that when the FDA and the ACIP actually come out with their recommendations for now, that it's the recs would be for nursing home patients over the age of 65, particularly those who are in frail health. And then for the rest of people who are otherwise young and healthy, the recommendation to get your third shot may be not quite yet. So we'll see. That's my prediction on how things will come through. The data is, we have very good data that says that right now boosters aren't needed for the vast majority of people. We have good data that suggests that maybe it'll help prevent some breakthrough infections. Most of that data comes from other countries. Our own internal data is not as strong. But I will say that older people, particularly those in nursing homes and in frail health, I think it'll make sense, and we'll probably see that advocated. So what's new in treatment for COVID? Not a lot. A lot more excitement recently about monoclonal antibodies. Monoclonal antibodies are that part of our immunity that has the antibody in it that latches on to an antigen and then neutralizes it. The monoclonal antibodies we use for COVID has two different antibodies in it that are directed against the spike protein of COVID. Is it a magic bullet? No. If you look at it in large populations of people, it does reduce the rate of hospitalization somewhat. There's enough studies now, so I believe that to be true. So you have to immunize roughly, or with the monoclonals, 15 people to save one hospitalization. But what, you know, if you do 100 people, that's 10 people you save in hospitalization. So, you know, it adds up. So we Wake Forest Baptist Health, we have monoclonal antibody infusion sites now in three places. We have one in Greensboro at Pisgah Church, here in Winston at the Clemens Urgent Care, and then we now have one up in Wilkes, and that's associated with assistance from the federal government and FEMA, and up in Wilkes County, and they certainly could use the help up there, because I think we've talked about a lot that the mountain counties have been hit harder with COVID because their vaccination rates are lower. So that's the good news about monoclonals. The bad news is that everyone in the country is using monoclonals now, and the companies, it's a hard drug to make, and they are trying to ramp up production, but it's going to take a while. And I have a feeling we're going to be in a situation where we're going to have shortages of those drugs in the next week or so. So the way to get access to these monoclonal antibody infusion sites is usually through your primary care physician, because an appointment and referral has to be made by a physician in order to get the infusions. Let's talk a little bit about living with COVID. And as I'd mentioned when we were talking about home testing, you know, so COVID is never going to 100% go away. It's basically going to slide into the background of all of the respiratory viruses that circulate. So it could be rhinovirus, which is our main virus, which, by the way, there's a lot of going around right now. Or it could be paraflu virus, or it could be an adenovirus. These are all viruses that cause colds. So you'll just add COVID to that list. Once all of our vulnerable people have either been repeatedly exposed to COVID and gotten immune, or gotten vaccinated and gotten immune, then we don't have to worry so much about vulnerable people being exposed and controlling a pandemic or an epidemic. And at that point, quarantine and isolation might be something that'll go away. That's going to be a ways out, probably at least a year from now, because we have to be able to get the pandemic controlled and vulnerable people protected before we get to that point. In the transition, things that will help us live with COVID are things that I've talked about, like home testing, having a routine of when you're ill, staying home from work and school, wearing masks when you're indoors if there's high viral transmission in the community, once viral transmission goes down, then we may won't have to wear the mask, so we keep an eye on what that transmission is. And that tells us how free we can be. Other things that will become in, I do think that more and more venues are public will be either requiring vaccination or a negative test. And that right now is starting to happen, and the good example is Merlefest. So Merlefest was scheduled for the fall this year rather than the spring, and it starts today. And Merlefest is a big deal. People come from all over the country and all over the world to listen to old time and bluegrass and country music up in Wilkesboro, North Carolina. Small town, big event. And because of that, if it gets crowded, viral transmission could become a concern, like it was up in Provincetown in Massachusetts. So Merlefest has decided everyone will have to show proof of vaccination or a negative test. I think it's within 72 hours. And so if you're planning on going to Merlefest, bring one of those proofs. Now, if you haven't gotten tested, remember I told you that it's a little hard to find testing in the area, particularly if you don't have symptoms. And so these are things you're going to want to think ahead about, how to get them and where to get them. And the one place we do not want people to go to get a test is an emergency department. Our emergency departments are full enough right now and busy enough. We just can't be doing asymptomatic testing. And if you come to, I think, any hospital emergency department in the area now to get an asymptomatic test for COVID, if you're sick, that's one thing. But if you're not sick, you'll get turned away for that. They're not going to do it. So up in Wilkes County, there is a testing site available at Merlefest itself. I would expect that line to be long. Or you can go to the health department. The number of tests available there will be limited. So the best thing you can do is arrange and get your test before you come to Wilkesboro to go to Merlefest. So other things about living with COVID. Having Merlefest is an example of living with COVID. You make a modification to make it safer, vaccination or testing, but you have the festival. We need to have things to have fun. We need to have things to offload and relax and to celebrate our cultures and just to get out and let loose. One of those things is our fairs. So the Western North Carolina Fair, I think it's going on right now, actually, in Asheville. And the State Fair, I believe, is still on tap to happen in Raleigh. Minnesota Fair, State Fair happened. There's fairs going on all over. So we're talking about our fair here in Winston-Salem, the Carolina Classic Fair. And that's scheduled for the first week of October. And a plan has been submitted to the City Council for how to make the fair safe. I've looked over that plan, as has Joshua Swift from the County Health Department. Our thoughts and recommendations are, with the modifications placed, that the fair can be done safely. Most of it's outdoors, and that's a good thing. In fact, the real classic things for fairs, the livestock showing and the little doggies herding the geese and, you know, going to get your funnel cake and all those things, that's all outdoors, and that's fine. The rides on the Midway, as long as crowds can be prevented and congregation of people in close proximity, that's fair. That's good too. The big buildings like the Annex and other places where you see the massive pumpkins and the and such. Those buildings are big, well ventilated. But that's where our vaccination site was, and so what it's going to be, if the city council is yet to fully vote on this, I think it'll be next week. But if they give the go ahead, it'll be masks. Particularly indoors, but I think they're going to be required outdoors as well. And if it's crowded, I agree with that. That mask should be worn there. And that there will be certain things done to try to spread the crowds out over the time. Some of this includes variable ticket pricing and such. And Joshua Swift and I have been talking about having a vaccination booth at the fair. It was suggested that we have a Dr. Old dunking booth too, but I vetoed that. So anyway, that's another example of something with some modifications that I think can be done. So that is an example of living with COVID. So in the transition period from COVID being a full-blown pandemic to it being a background cause of a common cold, we'll be in this transition period for a while, and then we'll be doing things to live with COVID so that we all don't go nuts during the time frame, and we keep people safe and out of the and from getting serious infections, particularly those that result in hospitalization or those unfortunate deaths. As always, the main way to keep yourself safe is still get vaccinated. Here in Forsyth County, our vaccination percentages are inching up. For all comers now, all age groups, we're just a tad bit over 50% fully vaccinated. And for those over the age of 12, it's getting to be close to 60%. For those over 18, it's 62%. And then for the older group, it's over 80%. So we're slowly inching up, but we need more people to step forward and get vaccinated. And that'll help slow down viral transmission. It'll help us prevent wintertime waves of virus. I think that we just need to keep talking about it. People just need to do it. The other thing about it is that over 90% still of the people who are getting hospitalized in our hospital are unvaccinated. So the best way you can keep yourself from getting a serious COVID infection or getting hospitalized is to get the shot. It's going to make a lot more sense to increase the number of people vaccinated rather than to just give boosters to a certain population, because that will slow transmission, whereas highly vaccinating a smaller group of people is not. A lot of myths that still pop up about vaccine. And some of it just irresponsibly brought up by celebrities who have large social media followings. And one lately in particular, I won't mention the name, but most people will know it, is having to do with fertility issues, reproductive health, and testicular swelling or problems in men or infertility in women. And I will say emphatically, those things are not associated with the vaccine. And the infertility thing, there's not even biological plausibility. I can't even think of a way that the vaccine could do that and cause infertility. So, watch out for misinformation such as this. It spreads very quickly, like most rumors do. I've been asked to talk a little bit again about pregnancy and COVID. So it's pretty clear now through large registries and following pregnant women that the risk of having an adverse event if you get COVID during pregnancy is higher. Not hugely higher, but higher. And it's statistically there. Having a miscarriage is a little bit higher risk if you get COVID during pregnancy compared to if you don't get COVID. And this is why the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecology and other groups, including the AMA, and advocate and say that pregnant women should get immunized for COVID. And it's to help with your health and your future baby's health. And if you do get immunized in pregnancy, you get a little benefit that antibodies get passed on to your newborn, and you give them protection for the first 6 months of their life. And that's a good benefit to transfer to your baby. So if you're pregnant, get immunized. If you're not pregnant, get immunized, and you'll not have to worry about infertility. So, with that, I guess I'll open it up for questions, if there are any out there.
So we had a question come in about efficacy of various vaccines against breakthrough cases.
Efficacy of various vaccines against breakthrough cases, against serious infection, hospitalization, and death, they're all about equal. Even Johnson & Johnson, which we've always postulated, might be a little bit lower. But for serious infection, hospitalization, and death, they're all hanging in there. And they're about the same. There has been something published lately saying that Moderna might have a little bit more protracted and higher antibody levels as time goes out compared to Pfizer, but it's a little unclear yet whether that actually translates to reduced breakthrough infections. There's some data from other countries suggesting it might be lower with Moderna than Pfizer. We have not seen that in the U.S., and actually my own experiences here with looking at it in Forsyth County and in North Carolina and at Wake Forest University, where we have some actually very good data, we haven't seen anyone pull ahead yet. But
Home
tests for COVID, they're a little bit less accurate than a laboratory-based PCR, but you know, for most purposes that they would be done for, I think they're good enough. And one of the reasons is because the amount of virus that's present with Delta is higher, so it's easier for a test to grab onto it. And now that's for symptomatic people. For asymptomatic people, the sensitivity of the home tests is much lower. So if you need a test, for instance, if you're asymptomatic, if you want a test to do something like travel or whatever, you'll want a PCR-based test for asymptomatic people.
And then the antiviral drug, kind of Tamiflu for COVID, is there any update on that?
The Tamiflu for COVID antiviral, which is a number, I keep forgetting it's an experimental name is a number. There's no updates on that yet. I still think that that's going to be something that'll be around daffodil time rather than tree changing time. Any other questions?
Can you talk about the differences between
allergy symptoms and COVID symptoms, it really hasn't changed much. Now, if you've been vaccinated, the symptoms of COVID are oftentimes much more subtle. Compared to being unvaccinated, you're less likely to have a fever, you're less likely to have bad body aches or headaches. The main symptom in vaccinated people is stuffy nose, sore throat, and loss of sense of taste and smell. So allergies tend not to give you a loss of sense of taste or smell, and if they do, it's minor. I mean, you can still, best way is sniff the coffee can, and if you can smell coffee, you're doing okay. And that'd be more likely an allergy. Just nasal stuffiness, particularly associated with itchy eyes and red eyes, that's more likely an allergy than COVID. If you got a bit of a cough and you got a sore throat, that's a little bit more likely to be COVID than an allergy. So sometimes they cross over a little bit. If you're not sure, get a test.